You're listening to the Get Ready to Rock Rockcast. Classic rock, news, reviews, and interviews.
Hello, I'm Peter Muir, and this is the very first Get Ready to Rockcast from GRTR. Whether you're listening to this on the move, at your desk, or in bed, we hope you'll enjoy the next 30 minutes of news, reviews, and interviews. Coming up, we're talking to Joey Tempest of Swedish melodic rock band Europe. Jethro Tull's Ian Anderson tells us that he hates vinyl. And we have full-length tracks from up-and-coming bands 25 Yard Screamer, Delta, and violinist Anna Phoebe, featured musician on Jethro Tull's acoustic tour of the UK in March and April 2007.
Get Ready to Rock, Masters of Melodic Rock.
Now, Europe first came to our attention in 1986 with the international smash hit The Final Countdown. However, this song was a curse as well as a blessing, because it gave them a reputation as purveyors of synth-driven, chart-friendly pop rock, and that, sadly, was to drive the band apart in 1992. They played their last gig in Portsmouth in the UK, and main men, singer Joey Tempest and guitarist John Norum, went on to pursue solo careers. Europe reformed for a Millennium Concert in Sweden in 2000, and 4 years later released Start from the Dark, which successfully updated the band's sound. In October 2006, they released current album Secret Society. It's received excellent critical reviews and re-established their credentials as a guitar-based melodic heavy rock band. In February 2007, Europe played a series of dates in the UK as part of their European tour. David Randall caught up with the band at the start of the tour in Liverpool, and he asked singer Joey Tempest if they deliberately lowered the keyboards in the mix for the new album.
To our ears and to people we work with, it's more timeless, you know, if you don't exaggerate too much on the keyboards. If you do that, it's sort of... you should mix it in, you know. And we're a guitar-oriented band from the beginning. That's where we want to stay, in that world. But Mick is very talented, and he plays more keyboard on the album than you think, but the mix is a bit lower in the mix, maybe.
Yes.
He's been writing on his last album as well, so Mick and myself and John has written most of it. Maybe I've written some of myself as well, so I've written most, but everybody's involved, and keyboards are important, but to make a fresh sound today, those productions of the 80s that are the most dated, they put the keyboards the highest.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You gotta have dry drums, you have to have dry guitars, and not too much effects on vocals, because that's the mistake some of the productions of the 80s have. And the records become a bit dated. Sometimes in a charming way, because you hear, that's an 80s production, fantastic. <Yeah. laughs> But the 70s and the 90s have something in common, or the new millennium, I suppose, the 70s. It's more drier mixes, not too many effects, be careful with that. Tight and straight, that's how the 70s and those albums we love, they were very kind of dry and in your face, warm.
So you're particularly proud of the last album and this one, representing more of the current band sound, really. And,
oh yeah, that's how it sounded when we rehearsed. Yeah. Well, especially Start from the Dark, that's straight from rehearsal into the studio. That's very raw, straightforward rock album. We spent a little bit more time with Secret Society, and we wanted it to sound a bit more more fresh, I think. Put a little bit more work into the songwriting, the lyrics, and we're on a journey. We're going to take this further.
Excellent.
So it's important for us to show our faces and prove that we're back, because it's easy to think, oh, they're from the 80s, blah, blah, blah. But if we're around, do albums and tours, you know, we can finally convince them that we were never away. That's the thing about Stones, you know, they were away from 1981 or 1982 to 91. They were away for 8 or 9 years when Charlie Watts was saying those famous, you play, then you wait. You know, he just sat waiting for those two doing solo albums. And you don't think of Rolling Stones having a break now. So I want Europe to come to that. We don't compare ourselves with them, but I want Europe to come to the stage that they were never away. They've always been here. They're a great band.
I'm sure
that's where we're going to come.
Thanks, Joe, for all that. And best of luck with this leg of the tour.
Yeah,
I'm sure you're going to get great reaction.
You can hear our full interview with Joey Tempest, where he discusses Europe's background, breakup and reformation, online at getreadytorock.com.
You're listening to the Get Ready to Rock Rockcast. Classic rock, news, reviews and interviews.
There's a new album from Birmingham pomp rockers Magnum out in March, and the band plays UK dates in May. Full details on our website, where GRTR reviews editor Jason Ritchie writes, Magnum return with possibly their most intricate album in regards to production and instrumentation. They really have put the pomp back into rock on this little beauty. Magnum fans are in for a real treat. Marillion released their new album Somewhere Else in early April and tour in June. GRTR's David Randall writes, this might not be Marillion as we know them. There's not a Kaylee or built-in bastard radar within earshot, but it may just be their best album yet. You'll find the complete album reviews at getreadytorock.com by following the menu links and then using the drop-down or A to Z index. We regularly update our new release and tour information, which supplement our main news feature page.
Get Ready to Rock, the best in new music.
Now, Delta is a new duo formed by Andy Granger and Naomi Coleman, who describe their music as a blend of acoustic, indie, country and soul. We like this. You'll find a 4-star review of their album due out in May in our reviews section. Here's a track from it called Boy From Nowhere. Delta and Boy From Nowhere. You can hear samples of all the tracks off their new album by clicking the link to our audio primer. It's on our main homepage at getreadytorock.com.
You're listening to the Get Ready to Rock Rockcast. Classic rock, news, reviews and interviews.
In March 2007, Jethro Tull start their first ever acoustic tour in the UK, supporting the release of a new CD compilation, The Acoustic Jethro Tull. As the Tull back catalogue becomes available in digital download format, GRTR's David Randall asked Ian Anderson about his thoughts on the age of the iPod.
Do you like the thought of the Tull back catalogue being digitised, Ian, or are you a vinyl man at heart?
I've always loathed the vinyl. I mean, I hated the plastic stuff right from the word go. I remember the acute disappointment that I had when I first got a record player and bought the first vinyl LP, whatever it was. I think it might have been one by Jimi Hendrix or Traffic or something like that. I was quite horrified at the real scratchy, awful quality of it. I remember the real disappointment when we made our first record. The hours you spend in the studio and in the cutting room to try and make this first vinyl master in acetate ready to go to be made into the factory produced item. There was a real sense of anticlimax, you know, when you heard this rather thin, scratchy, awful, clicky, not very nice kind of compromise sound. And what you had to do to get your audio tapes, which sounded fine, onto vinyl was to make a lot of compromises in the audio sense. You had to do a lot of things in terms of limiting, of controlling phase, of dealing with issues that inevitably resulted in cutting at lower levels because of inner groove distortion as you approached the inside of the spiral. You know, things got rather more distorted, and there were just elements that made it very much less than enjoyable. So when CDs came along, it was a step up, although in its own way somewhat disappointing because of the limitations of 16-bit recording, which the human ear can hear as being dynamically a little cruder than analog tape. But these days, of course, in the studio, we work normally at 24-bit standard, which is so superior to 16-bit. Doesn't sound like a lot of bits more, but the end result is that the human ear now is completely fooled into believing what it's getting is not a series of dots and dashes in a digital context, but now a meaningful replica of the original sound, or indeed if it's been recorded on analog tape and remastered in the digital domain these days at 24-bit 96K resolution, as all the Jethro Tull catalogue has now been at Abbey Road Studios, then you know, you have something that's really much, much better quality. Now, the fact is that we're still listening to CDs with all their limitations, and in many ways we've gone backwards because many people, me included, are listening to MP3 files or other compressed audio files, which are way below the standard of CD. But the convenience factor, the speed of operation, the facility to mix and match your own record collection and set up playlists on your Walkman or your MP3 or your iPod, whatever it is you might have, means that you can control your listening pleasures in a way that you couldn't before. And also to have the enormous access through digital downloading to a huge variety of music that the most ardent record collector would have found possible before. You can go online and pluck rarities from the ether. You can find ancient recordings by blues artists and classical musicians and folk artists, and you know, it's just all out there. You want to hear some Bangla music, you want to hear some Bollywood, you want to hear some traditional English folk or Irish folk music, whatever, you just pop in some little suggestions into the search engines and down it all comes at 79p a hit. So you know, it's arguably a tremendous upside to having the flexibility and the breadth of musical choice from digital downloading. But the only negative side would be that from a pure audio file perspective, it's not that great. The stuff that you buy when you pay your 79p for a track or your 99 cents in the USA, it comes down to 128 kilobytes per second, which gives you an audio quality something like a mini disc, rather less sparkling than a CD, but you know, it's okay. And given that most people are not listening to music in truly favorable conditions, they're listening to music in their car or on their iPod as they're walking down the street or riding in the tube train or whatever it is, a lot of general polluting noise around them, it doesn't make a lot of difference, frankly, once you're in your car, whether you're playing a cassette, a CD, or plugged your iPod into the car stereo. I mean, either way, you're competing with road noise, wind noise, engine noise. It doesn't make a lot of difference. But if you're someone who likes to listen to music in the perfect tranquility of your domestic environment and shut your eyes and close yourself off to the world and concentrate on the music, then I would suggest that you're probably better off in doing what I do for a living, which is to make your own music at high resolution and just listen to that.
So have you got an iPod, and if so, what's on it?
I have one of the original one, and then another one which you know, had a bit of a better battery, and then one of the current brigade of video iPods, which is the one I use, really, but it's mostly what's on it. is work music. It's not there for reference purposes, or sometimes music, you know, including things that I'm working on. I have a little gadget that plugs into my iPod that allows me to do stereo 16-bit recording, so I can use it for, you know, as a tool to jot down ideas for new songs. I can record live concerts straight onto my iPod when we're out on concert tours. So it's a very flexible tool, really, the iPod. I've tried several other MP3-type players, but always found the iPod to be the most user-friendly and iTunes best organized of software packages for keeping your library and playlists in order. I was never an Apple guy until this Christmas, when I had to refurbish my studio and invest in new technology, keep up with the digital age, and so I had to bite the bullet and get my first Apple Mac computer and recording software especially designed for the Mac.
You can hear a full interview with Ian Anderson talking about the acoustic tour and CD on the GRTR website at getreadytorock.com.
Get Ready to Rock. Check out our competitions page. Your chance to win CDs and DVDs.
Now, what is it with girls and violins? We've had Vanessa May, Linda Brava, Sharon Kaur, and now Anna Phoebe. Anna's been lending her string skills to the Jethro Tull back catalogue. She has a mini album on current release and will be playing tracks from it when she guests with Tull on their UK acoustic tour in March and April. Anna is also providing us with an exclusive blog of the tour, telling us all about the gigs and the thrills and spills of life on the road. Lots to look forward to then from this promising artist. Here's the title track from that mini album, Gypsy.
GetReadyToRock.com.
Get Ready to Rock the Rising Stars.
GetReadyToRock.com was one of the first music sites to feature an interview with The Darkness before they achieved major success with their first album. We do try to actively encourage new music and give a voice to independent and up-and-coming artists in our Rising Stars feature. Wales has given us the Manic Street Preachers, the Stereophonics, and the King of Cool, Sir Tom Jones. But 25 Yard Screamer have closer affinities with 70s hard rock trio Budgie, themselves influencers of both Rush and Metallica. And you can hear echoes of Rush's music in the progressive leanings of 25 Yard Screamer. David Randall talked recently with the band and started off by asking how they got together.
Well, I made Donal and Matt play a showcase gig for me in Bracknell in 2002, Easter 2002. And I'd met Matt previously at through my wife, and hoping that he would play bass for me and knew a drummer, which he did, luckily. And we rehearsed for about 4 or 5 months, I think, together, and then did the gig in Bracknell, which was terrible, but good enough for us to decide that we wanted to keep going, so we carried on playing from there.
Matt, who plays bass, what are the band influences, really? What artists have you listened to over the years, and who you think influencing your music at the moment?
There's a definite progressive bent there. You've got people like King Crimson, Rush, Marillion, I think especially modern Marillion. Then Donal himself, he brings some sort of heavy influences like Mastodon and so on, and other ones like Carcass, but I can't actually see in the band. But there's a love of progressive rock and basic music that is prepared to challenge a little bit and explore lots of sort of different areas, you know, set lots of atmosphere, that sort of thing. So that's what we've really started to try and do now. Perhaps it hasn't been reflected so much when we first got together, but certainly it's starting to come through now in big waves.
Now, can I ask Nick about the new album, which is scheduled for release in March, early April? Tell us a bit about some of the pieces on there, especially this long piece called Cassandra.
Yeah, Cassandra came out of an idea that Matt brought in one day after he'd read a book of mythology. And for those who don't know, Cassandra was a lady who was courted by the god Apollo, but ultimately rejected his advances, so he cursed her in that he gave her a gift of foresight, and then decided that she would keep the gift, but nobody would ever believe her. And we sort of took that idea and decided that quite early on we couldn't go too classical with it because it just wouldn't work. But with all the conspiracy theories that abound and things that the doubts that were put over about things like 9/11, it seemed to me particularly that if somebody had known about 9/11 and then had come forward and said that this was going to happen, nobody would have believed them anyway. And we used that as a way of bringing it sort of more up to date. But also, it's to do with, the idea that personal events in people's lives can be just as tragic as global events, if not more so for some people. Of the other tracks on the album, Blacklight is kind of a bit of a life journey from somebody from their early life, and then a descent into madness. And Insomnia is about not being able to sleep very well, essentially. And that's the lightest one on the album.
And finally, Donal, what are you hoping to achieve with the band? The album comes out in March, but what does the future hold for 25 Yard Screamer?
I have absolutely no idea. No, it would be just nice if people listened to our music and we got to do this as our day job rather than have to work in sort of meandering, meaningless jobs. Just get to do what we want when we want to do it.
Best of luck to all of you anyway for the future.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you very much.
David Randall with 25 Yard Screamer. GRTR is actively promoting the band's third album, Cassandra. You can get a copy right now via the link on our website. Here's a track from it. That's 25 Yard Screamer and Boy in the Window. The band's also featured on our B2B audio primer, where you'll find several other new acts with full-length MP3s. Just follow the links from our main homepage. And there you have it. That's it for this first GRTR Rockcast. Thanks for being with us. Remember, there's lots more information about the featured artists on the website at getreadytorock.com. You can also sign up for our monthly newsletter, which signposts latest additions to the site and new competitions. And we've an active forum and other interactive features to maximise your enjoyment. For example, you can send pages to friends or colleagues simply by following the link at the foot of the review or interview. So for now, goodbye. And get ready to rock.
GRTR Rockcast Volume 1 was presented by Peter Muir and produced by Derek Timms for GetReadyToRock.com. Incidental music by Ambersand. All tracks used with the artist's permission.